We're going to turn now to our first guest. We've got Gemma from Extreme Zero Waste in the studio. Morning, Gemma.
Morning.
So, for those who don't know, Gemma is the new Sarah.
Yes. That's my official title.
It's your official title.
Sarah 2.0.
So, what is your proper title? When they told you...
Well, the role was actually advertised as being the walking variety show of Extreme Zero Waste, but it falls under communications and behaviour change.
Okay, all right.
But I think walking variety show is actually a better description. Sarah coined that.
That sounds like a Sarah thing, yeah.
Yeah,
so for those of you who don't know, Sarah Lancaster, she left to go to Tauranga and she left the radio station as well, sadly. But it's great to have you here, Gemma. And have you settled into the job? You've been doing it for a couple of months now?
Yeah. Joined in the peak period over summer. The team had just got through the busy Christmas period, so it was just after New Year's when I joined.
Yeah.
So, straight into the frying pan over summer, but definitely starting to find my feet now.
Have you been around and like seen what all the different jobs are that happen?
Yeah,
with
so
the crew?
That was the best way to learn joining the team. Coming in January, I hopped on some of the runs and spent some time in the shop, spent some time up in the organics yard, spent some time just around the site. And so,
What's the second best job after yours?
Definitely being a runner.
Yeah, you quite like that?
Yeah, I had you need good energy. Like, I think it was pretty humbling for me.
You need high levels of fitness.
Yeah, you do. You definitely need a good coffee in the morning to get you through, and you need a good lunch in the day. A good pie stop to get you through. But no, it's beautiful, like going back and forth across the bridge and being the crew are so fast in terms of how they move across the town, and it's a really nice way to like weave around town and see the different areas.
I actually had the privilege of being on the truck a couple of times when I was making 10 years ago I made this film about Extreme, and so I just jumped in the cardboard crushing area. Probably health and safety wouldn't let me do it anymore, but just this random guy on the truck. But no, it was really cool to see the guys in action. Different bunch of guys then, of course. But yeah,
they're a good crew.
So you'd been in Raglan already before you got the job?
Yeah, so I've been here about 2 years now.
And but the sort of where I was going with that was, what did you learn about Extreme once you're inside the job that surprised you, or you didn't know, or you think, hey, people should know about that? Like, what's something that hit you?
Yeah, that is a great question. I didn't know we had 3 collection trucks that move around the town doing our curbside collections. I thought I was pretty clued up on recycling and waste, but I didn't actually know why it's so important for us to be separating out our recyclables.
Is that because you've seen what happens after the guys pick it up?
Yeah, so I've seen the dynamics of, A, what happens on the collection trucks when the team are weaving around throughout the week collecting them, and then B, what happens when they actually come back to site and how they're processed.
Yeah.
And so that was like a really nice surprise for me, being like, oh, there's always so much more you can be learning, which I understand can be frustrating. You're like, oh, why does this seem so hard? But it shouldn't have to be hard with recycling. It's just getting the basics down.
I think the thing I noticed when I had that exact same experience of being on the truck and then watching them sort a little bit afterwards, and it was if someone puts a lid back on a bottle, how much that slows them down.
Yeah.
Because it's a real flurry of activity. It's quite fun to watch, actually, them sorting. It happens so fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, as soon as they pick up something with a bottle, it completely derails the speed.
Yeah. And so the thing with that is, particularly if it's glass, and we're putting the lids back on top of our glass bottles or, you know, wine bottles, it's because the glass truck going around, that's, collecting all the glass and all the cardboard, that's then separate from the crew who come around in the truck and collect all of the metals and the plastics.
Yeah.
And so technically, like, the metals, they're coming around and being on a separate collection. So it slows down heaps, when you're on that glass truck and you're collecting just your crate of glass and then you're tipping it out and then you've got to be on the back, like, unscrewing all of the lids.
It doesn't seem much. It doesn't seem much in your house.
Yeah.
And I know it's instinct to put it back on
and
be tidy, but...
Yeah.
It really doesn't help at all.
No. Yeah. So keeping the lids off. And also just coming out of Easter, we have a big spike. What am I saying?
Spike.
A spike.
Yes, a foil spike. That's what you're trying to say.
A spike. A spike. Yeah. Yeah. which definitely can be recycled. And we want to see that in the curbside collections. We want to see all of your foil, but we want it to be in the biggest ball possible. Ideally, like fist size.
Is there going to be a prize for the biggest ball? Can we offer a prize?
Probably
on the radio live is not the time to make this decision, but...
I'm going to make a note of that one. How big is your foil ball?
Yes, and then we'll know how many Easter eggs you had.
Yeah. And that's because it's, coming back to the team coming around doing the collections, it's so much easier for them, you know, when we're coming around and doing the collections each week. The foil is aluminium, so if it's clean and it's squished into a big ball, that just goes straight into... the big crate where all of the aluminium cans go.
Does it have to be particularly clean?
Yeah. So like if you...
Not half an egg still in it or something.
Nah. So you wanna eat all your chocolate.
Yeah, what am I thinking?
Why would you be leaving your marshmallow egg in there?
Why would there be even an ounce of chocolate left in the foil?
Yeah. But if you have had, you know, like you've made a roast and you've left like... There's lots of like residual food on it. We don't want foil, you know, that's got half of your roast still stuck in there. But clean foil that you've licked it off and then you've crushed it all up together. Yep. That stuff is great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool. There was something I was going to ask about that, but it slipped my mind. So that's just like you take foil all the time. This is just messaging at the moment because it's been Easter.
Yeah. Yeah. And because it's just reminding folks that foil that we have wrapping around our little Easter eggs, it's the same material as what we've got in like our drinking cans where we crush up if we have a can of Sprite or a beer can or a kombucha can. It's aluminium. And so the aluminium foil, like we want that in our curbside collection, because we really don't want it going into landfill. It's a really valuable resource. Aluminium's like our best recycler. It's really lightweight. It's easy to crush up into bales and send it off to be recycled again.
Yeah, and it's pretty intensive to make it, isn't it?
It's crazy. Like if you want a scary insight for the morning, like if you just Google like aluminium mining, like it's pretty horrific. It's over in Australia and it's bauxite is... the material that's extracted out from the ground.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the main components that goes into making aluminium. And it uses so much energy just to make a can, you know, or to make aluminium foil. So it's like if you think back along that journey of everything that's gone into making that bit of foil, you're like, I should respect this little piece of foil and crush it up with the rest of my foil and keep it in circulation if I can.
Respect the foil and lick it clean. That's our message today.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah, yeah. I remember what I was going to say. For people who are new in town, Extreme Zero Waste is a charitable organisation or non-profit organisation, and I know people will be thinking, "Oh, why? It's a company doing rubbish. Why are they asking us to do the work?" Mm. Extreme Zero Waste was originally called Extreme Waste as a community group. It came out of the community, and it's all part of it. It's all part of our community. So I don't see it as a separate thing. So anything that we do benefits the community group, which in turn benefits us again in the community, and providing jobs and all that sort of thing. It's complicated, but there's no real separation between Extreme and the rest of the town when it comes to these issues. And I think that these issues need to be looked at that way as well. Like it's not someone else's problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that view of we're all stretched people, you know, we have really full lives and it is understandable. You get to the week and you're like, don't want to have to sort out my recycling or don't know what to do with my lids. But it's that way of thinking of like it's my waste isn't someone else's responsibility because all of these are really valuable resources that have gone into making all that stuff. And we're all connected to those back on that chain of all of the things that go into making everything we consume. So it's just recognizing like as a community we all have responsibility for that. Yeah.
All right, so that's the foil. You guys have got, should we talk about compost week coming up? Just mention that this is coming next month.
Yes. So coming into May, the first week of May will be International Compost Week, and so we are going to have a focus here in Whangaroa on all of our local composting solutions. We're going to have some local events, and between Extreme Zero Waste and the Whangaroa Environment Centre, we will be updating you with all of those event details soon. So okay. Keep posted.
Alrighty.
Keep you posted.
And last month was Slow Fashion Month, but you wanted to... Actually, can you just first of all say what Slow Fashion Month is? Come on, Belinda. Oh, no, it's not Belinda. Yeah. I thought the next interview was arriving, but
we're not onto pumpkins yet.
No, pumpkins soon, quarter of an hour.
What was I asking?
Why do we have this phrase slow fashion and fast fashion? What's the story?
Yeah, so we've just come out of March, and it's actually our friends down in Wanaka Wastebusters.
Yes.
So they are the Extreme Zero Waste of Wanaka.
Yeah.
And they coined this term Slow Fashion Month. And you're thinking about slow fashion, fast fashion. It's kind of these concepts of being aware that we have such an excessive amount of like clothing and textile consumption and waste in our world. And so fast fashion is talking about when we have textiles and clothes that are just produced to keep up with trends, and they're usually made of synthetic or like plastic fibers, and they're not made to last. They're usually made in pretty appalling working conditions and in environments where both people and the environment like aren't being taken into consideration. And so it's commonly in those like fast fashion chain outlets when we're in mall environments, and we'll see there's shops where there's just such a fast, you know, turnover and production of all these different clothes and styles. That's what fast fashion is.
And I heard from like my daughter who was working at Kahu's Nest for a little while, that from her perspective it was this clothing that came through. It wasn't very old, came through to Kahu's Nest, but wasn't very saleable either because it was falling apart really quickly.
Yeah. So it's not designed to last.
In fact, you could say it's designed to not last. I would say it that way around. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be hard to get exact like stats on it, but it's around like 85% of textiles are landfilled within a year globally after they're produced. And so you're thinking like, whoa, that's a huge amount.
And within 1 year?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so if you thought about like if that applied to you and your wardrobe at home, of like 80% of your clothes, if you just went and buried them in the backyard, you know, like or put them into quite like landfill, it's like that's an like, exorbitant amount of waste. So slow fashion, on the flip side of that, is thinking about how we can slow down our consumption of like textile and clothes. So the main things are like, one, looking if you can shop secondhand like we have here in Whangaroa, going to Kahu's Nest or heading to the Lions or any of our local op shops, checking out on Marketplace if you're needing things secondhand before buying new. Also thinking if you can borrow from someone, if you've got a fancy dress or event or like something specific, if you could borrow.
Yep.
If you can make it, or if you know someone who sews. Or equally then, like if you're going to be buying new, if there's any like local options that you can. We have like beautiful makers here in Whangaroa, or people who are trying to offer like ethical options.
There's lots of options
before buying new.
But this is all about the decision at the time of purchase.
Yeah.
By the sounds of it.
Yeah. And so, just over the month, we're thinking a bit more about clothing and textiles up at Kahu's. Well, the team are always thinking about there, like you're saying, Aaron, your daughter working there. The team see constantly day to day.
Yeah, they get daily reminders.
That are piling up, but we are just trying to give a bit more visibility to like, there's so many like epic and beautiful clothes that are up there. We had wedding dresses coming through for sale.
There's some fun videos on the Facebook and Instagram for Extreme recently.
Yeah, we had a wedding up on site. It's been a good month.
should make a clothing mountain, just a great big pile of clothes, just to show how much that would be. That would freak people out actually if they turned up and there was this huge pile of clothes in the car park.
Yeah,
it's like we can't sell this stuff. Yeah,
I'll propose that one for
try that. Yeah. see what management thinks about that.
No, the health and safety.
Yeah, see what health and safety thinks about that.
Yeah, but it's been a cool thing to reflect on over March, just being in the shop and seeing everyone moving through the space and shopping secondhand as people do in Kahu's Nest, and just like knowing that as people choosing slow fashion, like choosing to shop local and shop secondhand and slow that demand for new and like typically synthetic textiles, we want less of those in our world, eh?
Can I ask a dude?
Yeah, so my clothing has come from the tip shop down in Wellington.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's... I should have asked that question off the air. That's why I kind of murmured it.
I didn't want to
out you as I've got brand new clothes and I have to throw them out next week.
Yeah.
But yeah, so okay. So we'll talk more about your tip shop experience when we've gone through the stuff that you want to talk about, or have we gone through the stuff you want to talk about?
I think
about?
That's the list. Tick, tick,
okay.
tick.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's talk about the tip shop. So you've been in Raglan for a couple of years, but you were down in Wellington.
Yes.
Did you do uni down there?
Yeah. I moved to Te Whanganui Ātara, Wellington. I was studying at Victoria Uni, which was, it's a great city to be living in. So easy to walk and bike around.
Yeah.
And spent quite a few years at the tip shop in Wellington.
And it's actually, you said to me, it's actually called the tip shop.
It is called the tip shop.
It's not its nickname.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, commonly we do call like the dump shop, the tip shop, you know, those are common words for our resource recovery centres or our recycle centres. Dump shop sounds a bit cooler, eh?
Yeah, well, we're trying to, But here it's called Kahu's Nest.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so one of the guys, Pinny Campbell, who's one of the founders, said, I think they said it on Kahu's Nest because they'd always seen, they identify with the Kahu because they're always picking things up off the road.
Mm.
Yeah, so and that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah, so, okay, so you work there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of throughout my years studying, I was working there casually and then just started to spend more time and started working there permanently.
Yeah.
And it was epic. It's such a good team there.
Was that when you went off to university, did you know you had a focus on that sort of thing in life, or did that
tip
shop redirect you?
Is a good question. I went down to study environmental science and I got into my like volcanism and earth science classes and I was like, okay, I think like hard science and, you know, studying glaciers and rocks and weather patterns is not my calling in life.
Yes.
So redirected into geography and Māori resource management and environmental studies, which is more that like human intersect, like all of our intersects with the natural environment. And was already pretty interested in waste. Always had my glass water bottles and things carrying around with me over the years. But it was interesting, like, you know, as if like quite a few years back and like the zero waste movement was still kind of, you know, gathering momentum at that point. Here in Whangaroa, like there's big roots going back of how it's been ingrained in the community. Yeah. But back then, like, it was a pretty niche concept talking about...
In the big city.
In the big city, talking about zero waste. You know, we had, like, the rubbish trip and like, Hannah and Liam, who are kind of, like, our big names within the zero waste and waste world now. But, like, even, like, they were still just starting to build momentum out of that time. That was more of, like, a kind of niche space. So it's been epic to see over the years how talking about like waste and resources has really evolved and come way more into like all of our like day-to-day awareness more.
Yeah, because it's been like that here for 20 years.
Yeah.
So it just feels like we got the momentum up early and just been riding on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we, and you know, I mean, you knew as soon as you went to see friends or relatives out of town.
Yeah.
I remember being over in Tauranga and saying, oh, where's the recycle bin? And they were all like cringing and saying, oh, sorry, we don't have one. I said, no judgment. I just assumed. Yeah. And, but if their council didn't have one, then, mm-hmm. you know, there was nothing they could do about it. Well, I suppose there were things they could have done, but, you know, I wasn't expecting a young family to be focused on that if the council wasn't making it easy. And speaking of, like, councils, governments, the government's trying to standardise a lot of recycling stuff at the moment. I know we didn't plan to talk about this. I get the feeling that Extreme and probably a lot of community recyclers are somewhat further ahead of where the government's setting the standards.
Yeah, yeah. So Extreme Zero Waste has been leading the way in waste for like a long time.
Yeah.
Where the standardisation has come from is that recycling can be confusing. You know, you're in a, like you mentioned, Aaron, you're in a different city and you're trying to do the right thing recycling and you don't know what could go in the bin. So it came out of the government wanting it to be consistent across all of Aotearoa of the things that can go in our bins.
Yeah.
So like in quick summary, it's like paper and clean cardboard, clear like and clean glass jars and bottles, so like our brown clear and brown glass jars and bottles, and then just plastics 1, 2, and 5s. And it's mainly with the plastics there was so much confusion because all around NZ different places were taking different plastic, but here in Whangaroa, like at Extreme, we've been taking 1, 2s, and 5s for a long time because we've recognised those are the plastics that can actually have another life of being recycled. You know, we were kind of wish cycling, sending our number 7s or things over to markets where they weren't actually going to be repurposed and we were just kind of shifting waste around. So
yeah, I know there was an attempt to bring your 1 through 7 at one point, but it just...
Yeah.
Yeah, one group in Raglan can't change the whole world
instantly.
Well, I think Raglan can change the world, but
yeah, absolutely.
But not like that, not at the click of a finger, which was kind of what that required.
And then also our tin cans and our aluminium, like we were saying before, our aluminium cans and our tin cans, but where we're at in Whangaroa is like we're able to manage foil, you know, like we were saying before, part of the national standardisation is they're discouraging foil from going in around. And
is that because they're using machinery to do the sorting, like those MRFs, those recovery facilities?
Okay. So here we have awesome local people. We're not a machine factory. We have machinery that makes our jobs easier, but it's like we're a crew who are sorting through those materials so we can get a really good quality of all of the foil, you know, all of the aluminium getting baled and crushed together, all of the cardboard getting baled and crushed together. You don't quite get that good quality of that material separation when it's just automated through machinery.
There was something I learned about 10 years ago too, was there's an obsession, and I think in the corporate sector there, and this is me saying this, their ambition or their aim is to reduce their labour costs as much as possible and invest in machinery, even if it costs them hundreds of thousands of dollars to invest in machinery or millions of dollars. They'd rather do that than employ people. And sometimes maybe that's the right decision. But in this case, it still appears to be the case that the people do a better job of sorting.
Absolutely.
Than like sensors and magnets and things. Especially because those big trucks, like you see those big compactor trucks, you put all your recycling in there, the glass gets smashed up with the paper. And I don't know if they still do that in some places, but you're squashing the living daylights out of everything and it just, it's not as good.
Yeah. So in summary, if you're in Auckland, they won't be wanting your foil, but keep your foil in your bag.
Oh, yeah, if you're in Auckland,
ball for when you're back here in Whangaroa, we want your foil.
And if you're from Auckland but you've got a batch in Raglan, bring your foil down.
We want your foil.
Yeah, because if there's a way of dealing with it down here. Yeah. Okay, well, folks, we've been talking to Gemma from Extreme Zero Waste, the new... what was the title? No, tell us that phrase that Sarah left you.
The Walking Variety Show.
Walking Variety Show. So comms in corporate terms. Yeah, and you'll be somewhere in between those two things, I guess. That walking variety show, that could put some people off. I guess that was maybe the idea. Like, you've got to be out interacting with people, don't you?
Yeah, you got to be able to talk, talk waste and talk it a lot.
have you been doing tours with?
Yes, we actually have visitors? A tour today, which is really exciting. We've got NZ New Zealand National Geographic coming on.
Oh, that's right. I heard about that. Yes,
so that's like, actually New Zealand. Geographic?
New Zealand Geographic magazine.
Yeah, I keep wanting to drop the national.
Actually, no, I don't know either now. You got me confused as well.
I think it is New Zealand Geographic.
Yeah. Anyway, they'll be coming. They'll take some nice photos. They always have such nice photos in that magazine.
Yeah, so. They're going to be beautiful. And we've had schools coming through too, which is always epic.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for coming in. And nice to introduce you to the community for those who find out things on the radio. And I'm sure we'll be hearing and seeing more of you.
Yeah. Coming in to chat worms soon, come May.
Worms?
Yeah.
For the compost
week. For compost week.
Yeah, cool. All right, thanks, Gemma.